leaders of two major resistance groups, Hezbollah and Hamas, meet in Beirut to discuss bilateral relationship and boosting capabilities against the Israeli regime. Iraqis hold a funeral for those killed in a Monday U.S. air raid against resistance forces inside Iraq and Syria. And Russia tests the readiness of its air defense systems in Crimea Peninsula. This is NATO and Ukraine hold joint military drills in nearby Black Sea. This is World News with me, Behrouz Najaf. Good to have you with us. The Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, has met with the political bureau chief of the Palestinian Resistance Movement, Hamas. Said Hassan Nasrallah and Ismail Haniyeh underscored the deep relations between Hezbollah and Hamas and the importance of ties of the resistance front. The two reviewed the recent military campaign launched by Palestinian resistance groups against the Israeli regime that's known as Operation Al-Quds. They also discussed boosting the capabilities of the Palestinian resistance for final victory against the Tel Aviv regime. Haniyeh, with a high-ranking delegation, arrived in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, on Sunday. He's already met with senior Lebanese officials, including the president, caretaker prime minister, and parliament speaker. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned Israel against plans to press ahead with the occupation policy in Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and Judaize the holy city. Hamas says that resistance movements will not allow the regime to achieve such goals. It said that Tel Aviv has crossed red lines by the recent demolition drive in the Silwan neighborhood. The movement added that all options are on the table to respond to the aggression. The reaction came after Israeli forces demolished a shop in the Silwan neighborhood. Soldiers also attacked Palestinians protesting against the destruction. The Palestinian Red Crescent says that more than a dozen people got wounded. Palestinian farmers and traders in the Gaza Strip have held a rally to voice anger at Israel over its inhumane restrictions on exporting goods and crops. Demonstrators say the restrictions have led to dire economic crisis in the impoverished enclave.
Farmers, traders, and exporters of agricultural crops held a demonstration in front of the United Nations headquarters in Gaza to deliver their representative of the United Nations a protest letter against new restrictions imposed by Israel to export Palestinian agricultural crops like vegetables. Israeli closure of borders has led to a huge damage in the agricultural sector of the Gaza Strip.
We have come here to protest against Israeli closure of borders. We want to sell our products in the West Bank and other parts of the world. Israel intends to ruin our lives by adopting such restrictive measures. We call on all human rights organizations to do something.
Palestinian farmers are facing serious financial losses due to the Israeli closure of borders. This is viewed in Gaza as part of a larger plan by Israel to destroy Palestinian economy. Palestinian farmers called on the international community to be committed to its responsibilities and pressurize Israel into opening the borders.
Israel's new restrictive measures will ruin our crops before they reach the target markets. All of our vegetables are stuck here and eventually destroyed. I'm standing here to protest these restrictions that have made our lives unbearable. We demand opening of the borders so we can export our products. This blockade is inhumane.
Along with the Israeli ban on export, the latest aggression on the Gaza Strip has doubled the damage in agricultural sector. This has led to severe losses in this sector as Palestinian farmers can barely afford the living.
Our message to the United Nations is that Israel's measures are aimed to deteriorate life of all Palestinian farmers and traders. The latest Israeli aggression has inflicted a heavy blow on the agricultural sector. Israeli restrictions have no purpose but to ruin the agricultural sector of Gaza.
Due to the Israeli ban on the exportation of goods, the prices for agricultural products in Gaza have dropped significantly. Palestinian farmers and traders here say that the Israeli restrictions imposed on exporting crops aim to destroy the Palestinian economy. They call on the international community to end these restrictions and open the borders. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Israeli forces have demolished a store belonging to a Palestinian family in the occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. The facility was located in the Selwan neighborhood. The forces attacked Palestinians who were protesting against the destruction. The Palestinian Red Crescent says that more than a dozen people were injured. Demolition is the latest in Israeli long-running campaign of destroying Palestinian structures. Tel Aviv usually claims the structures lack construction permits. The Palestinians say that demolitions are in line with the land grab policy as the regime is expanding its settlements on occupied land. Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Iraqis have held a funeral for the resistance forces killed in U.S. airstrikes on Monday. The funeral was held in the capital, Baghdad. Iraqi resistance forces were killed in the U.S. air raids that hit their positions inside Iraq and Syria. The government has slammed the strikes and pledged to study all legal options to prevent such raids in the future. The military also wrapped the raids as a breach of Iraqi sovereignty. The popular mobilization units promised to down any hostile U.S. airplane flying over the country. The PMU says four of its members were killed in the U.S. air raids. And that was amid growing calls in Iraq for the withdrawal of U.S.-led foreign forces from the country. Iran's national radio and television organization, the IRIB, has hosted the 10th General Assembly of the Islamic Radios and Televisions Union. This year, the annual event focused on the U.S.'s recent measure to seize the websites of three dozen resistance media outlets. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalal reports from Tehran.
This is the 10th session of the Islamic Radios and Televisions Union, hosted by the Iranian state broadcaster, the IRIB. The event brought together representatives of 300 television and radio channels from 33 member states who attended the event through video conference. This year, the session was held with the motto of media justice and freedom of speech.
The 10th General Assembly of the Islamic Radios and Televisions Union comes as the websites of several of its affiliated media outlets were seized by the U.S. government. Something which the union views as an attempt to silence dissenting voices.
Last week, the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation confiscated the websites of Press TV and three dozen other Iranian and regional media outlets for what it described as a means to combat disinformation. Addressing the ceremony in Tehran, head of the IRIB, Abdul Adi Ali Askari, condemned the U.S. move as an open violation of freedom of expression, calling it a failed attempt to muzzle the truth.
The extent of the effectiveness of resistance media outlets prompted the U.S. government to breach its own norms regarding free speech and take down those media. So this shows that those media have been successful. But the West must know that their move indicates their weakness, and on the other hand, the seized media will not stop working.
The Islamic Radios and Televisions Union is a multinational entity, which is currently comprised of 228 member media outlets from 33 countries, covering a total of 22 different languages. The main goal of the union is to break the Western monopoly on media and to offer an alternative narrative for regional and global developments, as opposed to the narrative presented by mainstream media. The union says the West has engaged itself in a full-scale media war to silence the alternative voices.
The slogan of freedom of expression is just a tool for the West to impose its will on different countries. Those media outlets that speak the truth and enlighten the minds of the world nations face censorship just because they expose truths that come at the expense of Western interests.
Head of the IRIB World Service, Peyman Jebeli, says the West can no longer pull the plug on the resistance media since they have already reached global audience, including Western societies.
This time, we witnessed global solidarity with the people of Palestine in their resistance against Israel. Hundreds of thousands of people in Chicago, London, and elsewhere in the West voiced their support for Palestinians. Does the U.S. think it can prevent the voices of Palestine resistance from reaching America by blocking our media outlets?
The Islamic Radios and Televisions Union says any attempt by the West to take down independent media is doomed to failure, and they will continue to shed light on the truth. However, member media outlets say they will sue the U.S. for its illegal media crackdown and will take measures to restore the seized websites. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Taliban militants have launched an attack to seize the central African city of Ghazni. Local officials saying that the militants clashed with government forces using explosives to take control of the city. African troops are trying to take back most of the areas captured by the militants on the outskirts of Ghazni. The closure of roads and interruption of telecoms due to fierce clashes have made it hard to assess the number of casualties. The Taliban have intensified attacks recently to take key cities, and this amid stalled peace talks between the militant group and the government. Russia has tested the readiness of its air defense systems in Crimea amid rising tensions with NATO. Moscow says that 20 fighter planes and choppers of the Black Sea Fleet tested the S-400 and Panzer missile systems during the exercise. As Ukraine and NATO countries are holding military drills in the Black Sea, the maneuvers dubbed Sea Breeze 2021 began on Monday. It will last 2 weeks. It follows a rise in tensions between NATO and Moscow. Last week, Russia fired warning shots and dropped bombs in the path of a British warship to chase it out of its territorial waters off the coast of Crimea. Crimea rejoined Russia in 2014 following a referendum. Russia has posted its highest number of daily deaths from the coronavirus with 652 fatalities. Total COVID deaths there now surge past 134,000. That's the largest in Europe. On Tuesday, Russia also reported some 20,000 new infections. The caseload is now nearing 5.5 million. The capital, Moscow, and St. Petersburg have been the epicenters of COVID-19 over the past weeks. The Moscow officials have made vaccinations mandatory. They've also ordered businesses to send 30% of non-vaccinated employees home. Only 15% of the Russian population has been inoculated, as many are reluctant to receive jabs. More major cities in Australia are imposing COVID restrictions to fight flare-ups of the highly contagious Delta variant. Brisbane, capital of Queensland state, has become the fourth major city to issue stay-at-home orders. The three-day snap lockdown there begins on Tuesday evening. Sydney, Perth, and Darwin have already issued similar orders. In total, 10 million Australians are under lockdown. The country has been broadly successful in containing virus clusters, but now the authorities are saying that they have to be cautious and make what they call tough decisions due to the Delta variant. The strain was first identified in India. The British Conservative government has been rocked by another scandal, this time involving its former health secretary, Matt Hancock, who resigned after breaching COVID protocols. Now, his replacement, former Chancellor Sajid Javid, has promised to tackle the country's lockdown uncertainty and also bring the faltering health service under control. But his critics are asking if he's the right man for that job. Amina Taylor reports.
Britain has a new man in charge of the country's health service. Former Chancellor Sajid Javid replaces Matt Hancock to helm the most under-pressure department in government. First point of order, attempting to manage the COVID crisis.
I want to see the restrictions lifted and life going back to normal as quickly as possible. And that's right here and now, that is my absolute priority.
But this is no ordinary cabinet reshuffle. Previous Health Minister Matt Hancock was forced to step down after embarrassing revelations about his private conduct were made public.
I understand the enormous sacrifices that everybody in this country has made, that you have made, and those of us who make these rules have got to stick by them, and that's why I've got to resign.
Despite presiding over the shambolic handling of Britain's COVID response, it became clear that Hancock had fallen out of favour inside Downing Street.
I think it's really likely he was pushed. The exact provenance of the CCTV footage from within his office is not clear, but it's clear that it would be very hard to access that if you weren't in some way strongly connected to the government. So if Boris didn't want him to go, someone did very much, quite clear that his position was no longer tenable.
For those hoping there'd be a change in approach from the new health chief, they may well be disappointed.
There is no ideological difference between Sajid Javid and Matt Hancock. It's a new face, just as Jeremy Hunt. Jeremy Hunt became an absolutely figure of hate while he was presiding over the NHS, precisely because he was implementing these ongoing privatisation policies. We're living with the consequences of the NHS being driven into the ground. We've seen unprecedented, really corruption, giving away, gifting tens and hundreds of billions during this pandemic. Savid Javid, I have no doubt, will continue in the same line.
Britain's National Health Service was already creaking at the seams even before the pandemic. And for the millions who've been waiting to see a medical professional, well, they won't mind who is in charge of the health service. They just want to be made better, and made better soon. With COVID dominating the health agenda, Sajid Javid will have his work cut out for him. And as the fate of his two predecessors has shown, landing the top job is the easy part. Mina Taylor, London.
Protesters have clashed with police in several cities across Colombia amid growing dissatisfaction with the government's economic policies. Officers fired tear gas, they used the water cannon to disperse angry crowds in the capital of Bogota. Protesters threw rocks and Molotov cocktails at security forces. Rallies in other cities also turned violent. Demonstrators vandalized public transportation vehicles, attacking police stations. Colombia has been the scene of nationwide rallies over the past 2 months that have left over 60 people dead. The protests began over a government plan to raise taxes, but people now having got broader demands, including police reform and aid packages during the pandemic. Iran has recorded some 13,000 new COVID infections in one day, pushing the cases closer to 3.2 million. The health ministry also confirmed 142 COVID-related deaths. The death toll from the virus now standing at over 84,000. More than 2.86 million people have recovered. The ministry also said that 3,000 COVID patients are currently in intensive care units. Iran launched its nationwide vaccination campaign in early February. So far, 4.4 million people have received the first dose of a COVID vaccine. Iran has also been developing several indigenous jabs. Early this month, the health ministry authorized the emergency use of an all-Iranian vaccine called Barakat. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight. Marine Le Pen's far-right party has suffered a serious electoral blow when it failed to win a regional election in its stronghold in southern France. The Rassemblement National has pinned its last chances on taking the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur region after emerging victorious from last week's first-round vote, although by a small margin. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Kim Wilshire. The piece is titled, Le Pen's far-right party suffers blow in French regional elections. Marine Le Pen's far-right party has suffered a serious electoral blow when it failed to win a regional election in its stronghold in southern France. The Rassemblement National has pinned its last chances on taking the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur region after emerging victorious from last week's first-round vote, albeit by a small margin. However, an alliance of rival parties formed a Republican front against the Rassemblement National, RN, including the withdrawal of the Socialist Party and left-wing alliance candidate, and that prevented the far-right from taking the region. Sunday's result was a final bitter disappointment for the Rassemblement National, RN, which had been predicted to do well in at least five regions in the first-round vote last Sunday, 20th of June. In the end, the Rassemblement National came first only in the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur region, and then only by a narrow margin. Exit polls suggested that the Les Républicains candidate in PACA, Renaud Muselier, had polled a convincing 56.6% of votes against the Rassemblement National, RM's Thierry Mariani's 43.4%. Afterwards, Marine Le Pen said local democracy was suffering a profound crisis and criticized the unnatural alliances made between political rivals to confound a Rassemblement National, RN victory and prevent us from showing that we can win a region. In a brief but defiant post-election speech, Marine Le Pen added that the abstention rate showed a discontentment among electors that was a major signal for all political class and society in France. While many saw these elections as a warm-up for next year's presidential election, neither of the supposed 2022 leadership front-runners, Emmanuel Macron or Marine Le Pen, have been left with much to celebrate. Abstention was again a major factor in the local election. Despite appeals by politicians and the French Prime Minister Jean Castex for voters to turn out, almost two-thirds of French electors shunned the polling stations in regional elections on Sunday, 27th of June. For the first round, on Sunday, 20th of June, there was a record 66.74% abstention. This time, just under 66% of voters failed to turn out. Political analysts said the lack of interest in the regional elections is because France has become focused on the presidential election next year and the legislative elections that follow shortly afterwards. Philippe Ballard, who stood for the Rassemblement National, RN, in the Île-de-France region, insisted the far-right party was increasing its popularity in the country, and this will be played out in next year's leadership race. Stanislaw Guérini, MP for Emmanuel Macron's governing La République en Marche, the LREM, admitted the results were also a disappointment for the governing party that failed to win a single region. Stanislaw Guérini said, "We have work to do." He rejoiced that, in fact, the Rassemblement National, RN, had not gained any region either. Xavier Bertrand, a former minister when Nicolas Sarkozy was president, who was re-elected in the Hauts-de-France with 52.8% of the vote, saw his hopes of representing the mainstream right in next year's presidential election boosted. This is the first election since France's electoral map was redrawn in 2016, when the country's 22 regions were reduced to 13. The main winners appeared to be mainstream left Parti Socialiste and left-wing allies, and the centre-right La Républicaine. Both parties have been absent from the French political landscape since Emmanuel Macron's centrist La République En Marche election success in 2017. The first round of regional elections on Sunday, 20th of June, resulted in a drubbing for Emmanuel Macron's ruling party and disappointment for Marine Le Pen's far-right party, and a record low turnout with two-thirds of the voters effectively shunning the polls. For some observers, the outcome of the 20th of June first round raised doubts over whether the 2022 presidential election would come down to a duel between the president, Emmanuel Macron, and Marine Le Pen, in a runoff long seen as the most likely scenario. The first round results were a boost for the traditional right-wing Les Républicains, as well as the Socialist Party, who have been squeezed after the centrist Macron surged into power in 2017 with his new La République En Marche party.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Brother Hasnain Rajab Ali.
I begin in Allah's name, the Beneficent and the Merciful. We should talk about the ills in society. What can we do, wherever we are on earth, to be able to represent what the Quran is saying, the verse 78 of Surah Al-Hajj? You know, how can we be the representatives of people so that on Judgment Day, the Holy Prophet is pleased with us as for him to be our representative as the believers, right? Although he's the representative of all of humanity, understand? He's Rahmatulil Alameen, but there is this extra special mercy that Allah has given to the believers, and the messenger is going to hold us liable on Judgment Day for that responsibility, for we bear witness that he is our messenger of Allah. And we need to talk about these ills. And one excellent point is the fact that we are living in a society where not everything is conducive to an Islamic lifestyle. So what do we do, right? So first and foremost, we must understand that the entire human population, as a general rule, is good. The human population in general is good, regardless of what culture they belong to, what religion they belong to, what their backgrounds are. The human race in general is good. What does that mean? Everybody wants peace. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants to love. Everybody loves charity. Everybody loves to have an equitable lifestyle. Nobody likes injustices. You can watch any movie of any country, right? When there's injustice, it's disturbing. So we all know that all the movies that come out of Africa, from Asia, from Americas, you know, from Europe, all of them have a general theme that injustices are bad and justice is good. When you watch movies that where people, you know, practice good morals and uprightness and kindness, we love it. So that's the silver lining, that no matter what country we live in, the general population of that country are good. And you will notice that the majority of their actions and transactions are good. But unfortunately, they're not emphasized. you'll find that, for example, let me give you an example. Europe is a good continent, right? Every country in Europe, if you look around, the people are good. You know, they will help you if you fall. You know, there's love. But their lifestyle has this negativity from the perspective of alcohol, right? From the negativity of vulgarity, for example. And that's not in Europe. Vulgarity, vulgar language is everywhere in the world, right? Abuses. You find domestic violence and abuses is common all over, on all the five continents on earth. These are the things that are repulsive to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and for the believers. It's repulsive. So when you have a friend, for example, who is a colleague who works with you in the office, you'll find they're good people. But then at 4:30, 5 o'clock when they leave work, they want to go to the bar and get, you know, drink and do whatever, right? Let's not put them down because they do that. Let's not belittle them. It's not the way of Islam. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala detests when you and I are condescending against others. What we do is we encourage them with healthy lifestyles by offering them an alternative. You see, when they say, come on, let's go, I'm going out to get a drink, you want to join me? I say, I would love to, but how about we go to a cafe instead, you know? And, you know, the mocha is on me, right? What will happen is you're discouraging them from going. And if you remind them enough, in gentle ways, and then, by the way, they will be very curious. I remember my roommates in my university were always curious why I didn't drink. Like, why don't you drink? Because it was common for them to keep bringing kegs of beer on Thursday nights, right? When my university would consume about 50,000 gallons of beer per weekend. So a swimming pool every weekend, just think about the madness. And I'm right there, I'm watching these kegs rolling in, right? Beer bongs, they would put all kinds of stuff on it. And I'm watching these students do this, and I'm saying they don't know. No one taught them. No one gave them prescriptions. No one trained them early on to pray and to fast, you see, and to talk about God. Although they were Christians, and there were some in my circles who wouldn't touch alcohol. They were Christians. And when I would ask them, why don't you? I said, no, this is evil. This is bad. I said, how do you know this is bad? He says, well, I was taught at home. My parents taught me not to do this. I said, bravo. This is what true faith is about, right? So what happens is many a times when these people do drink and they do party the way they do, it's because no one told them it's wrong. No one gave them instructions that it's wrong. That's where you and I come in as a role model. And the minute you don't do it, don't say anything. You don't have to say anything. Don't say, you are filthy, you're going to hell, you're dirty, you're kafir. No, never say that. They say, come on, let's go to the club or let's go to the pub. No, I don't drink. Why not? Well, because it's not good for you. It's not healthy. It's not a healthy environment. Well, what do you mean it's not healthy? I remember I was in the Philippines and somebody, you know, was going to order pork in our gathering, right, in my circles of the some of the staff members that I was interviewing. And I said, if you don't mind, it's better if you order something else. And they said, sure, why don't, they would say, you don't eat pork, right? I said, no, I don't. Oh, you must be Muslim. I said, it doesn't matter if I'm Muslim or not. Pork is bad for you. See, if I said, yes, I'm Muslim, then they say, okay, it's valid. See, Muslims don't eat pork, so it's okay. I am not Muslim, therefore it's okay. I didn't say that. They say, oh, so you don't eat pork because you're Muslim. I said, it doesn't matter what faith I belong to. Pork is not good for you. So my advice to you is, you shouldn't eat it either. Oh, okay. And then I got a text message, a week later after I came back from the Philippines. Listen, sir, just want to let you know, I've stopped eating pork. Because I really thought about it, and you're right. You know, I did some reading up on it. I went on Google, and I searched it, and you're right. It's not healthy. See, if I would have said, yeah, I'm Muslim, you know, and this is my Sharia, and God has told me that if I eat pork, I'll go to hell. That's not how we do Dawah. How we do Dawah is by encouraging each other in the positive and sending those subtle messages to them, don't do it. What happens then is they go home and think, oh, my friend doesn't drink alcohol. He doesn't date. He doesn't sleep around. I wonder why. And, you know, they'll tell you, you're weird. Really? You don't have dates? Like, you don't sleep around? Like, you don't have fun? What kind of a human being are you? Are you a human or are you a robot? And I look at them and say, what do you mean? I don't understand. How do you have this willpower to stop yourself from that beautiful girl? And I said, my Lord has taught me how to have a vision of her tomorrow. And if she doesn't fit my vision, I don't care if she's the most beautiful woman in the world. It's not going to work. But it's the vision. What does Shaitan do? Shorten her vision. She's in your hand. She's near you. Take it. We'll think about tomorrow. That's the differential. Our religion has taught us about tomorrow, has taught us the consequences of the Day of Judgment, has taught us what will happen in paradise, has taught us through prophets and imams what are the consequences. It becomes a lot easier. So let's talk about how do we help each other to overcome these difficulties. And let's not be judgmental. You know, judgment-free zone. Somebody does something wrong, give them a look, and then they will wonder, why? What is this? Don't say anything. Then when they open up the conversation, set the standards gently, but always say to them, it's okay, I used to do this, or I was thinking about, or I have had friends who did that, but they gave it up. Oh, really? You mean I have hope to give it up? Maybe I can stop it? That's how it goes.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Now is the moment for supporters of Palestinian rights around the world to redouble their efforts to impose worldwide isolation on Israeli regime's colonial apartheid system, says Ahmad Abu Artema, researcher, in an article published under the heading, Spirit of Resistance is Alive and Well. Stay tuned for more. The latest round of fighting in Palestine may have ended with a ceasefire on May 21st, but the roots of the conflict remain unaddressed. These roots, if left unattended, will only result in more escalation and more victims. The structure of the Zionist regime project remains unchanged. It is a project that, from its inception, has been based on the uprooting of the native population in Palestine, ethnic cleansing, theft of land and resources, eradication of Palestinian identity, discrimination, the total control of the lives of the Palestinian people, and the denial of basic Palestinian rights. As long as the project is the same, the only difference between short rounds of military escalation and so-called periods of calm is that of varying degrees of aggression. During military escalations, the Zionist regime kills Palestinians. During the periods of calm, the Zionist regime steals Palestinian land. Under both scenarios, the Zionist regime's system of oppression humiliates Palestinians, controls their lives, uproots them, and discriminates against them. But May's escalation also demonstrated the determination of the Palestinian people and their steadfastness against Zionist attempts to supplant them, eradicate their identity, and break their morale. One question that arose after the latest escalation, as it does after every escalation, is simply, who won? Before answering, it is worth noting that the criteria for victory for a colonized people are different from the criteria for the colonial power. This should be fairly obvious, but is worth elucidating anyway. Throughout history, colonial powers have enjoyed military superiority, international political support, and plentiful economic resources. It is these very advantages that allow colonial powers to invade other nations. A balance of power, in fact, would preclude colonialism. As a result, colonized people, loss of life and property were correspondingly greater. They bore the brunt due to the imbalance of power. Consequently, it is important to define the criteria to measure what victory or defeat looks like in this case without comparisons that make the mistake of equating the sides. The strategic objective of the Zionist regime project since its inception is the establishment of a safe place for Jews from around the world. In order to morally justify this objective, the Zionist project portrayed Palestine as a land without people. It has utilized a wide variety of measures to eradicate the Palestinian identity and presence from the land, from direct massacres and forced expulsions to the destruction of villages and imposition of suffocating measures to undermine the Palestinian ability to survive. In Al-Quds, to this day, the Zionist regime project continues to prevent even the raising of the Palestinian flag. Parallel to attempts to erase the Palestinian presence, the Zionist regime project also directed its efforts to manufacturing an image of the Israeli regime as a natural, safe, advanced, and investor-friendly place, a normal country, as they claim. This explains the Zionist regime's exaggerated celebrations of every normalization of relations with any country, even if a small one. Against these efforts, how did the Palestinian people resist? The Palestinian people are winning first of all by simply maintaining their presence. The Palestinian identity is the very antithesis of the Zionist regime colonial project. The existence of the name of Palestine and the Palestinian people is a constant reminder that the Zionist regime is a colonial regime that replaced the Palestinians and whose existence causes suffering to millions of indigenous people. The Zionist regime project surely hoped that Palestinians would suffer the same fate as the indigenous population of North America and Australia. This did not happen. The Zionist regime has now to face the constant challenge of instability. Palestinians not only maintain their existence, but change the reality of suffering and subjugation exercised by the Zionist regime project to a state of resistance. Unwittingly, the Zionist regime has helped maintain this spirit of resistance. The humiliation at Israeli regime military checkpoints, continued land theft, the Judaization of Palestinian neighborhoods, and the system of apartheid are constant reminders that the reality is unadaptable, that the relationship with the Zionist regime is that of victim with aggressor and rightful owner with thief. In addition to the basic characteristics of the Zionist regime as a regime of colonialism, aggression, and violence, we can add foolishness and arrogance. What does this regime want after conquering some 80% of historic Palestine and controlling its resources and borders? Why does it not take the initiative to defuse the conflict and leave Palestinians to live in stability on the remainder of the land? What will it gain by uprooting a few more families in Sheikh Jarrah or violating Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the most sacred places for some 2 billion people worldwide? Perhaps the better question to ask is, can we really expect a regime based on conquest, aggression, ethnic cleansing, and repeated massacres to change suddenly into a rational state? Aggression and injustice are the opposite of rationalism. This is one of the pillars of universal justice. The more a colonial power exhibits the greed and aggression inherent to its nature, the greater the resistance. It was the Zionist regime's ongoing project to Judaize Al-Quds and expel its native population that caused this latest escalation. In doing so, the Zionist regime helped remind the Palestinian people of their unity. Palestinians in all localities participated in this round against occupation forces, from Al-Quds, Gaza, and the West Bank, to the refugees in Jordan and Lebanon who rushed to Palestine's borders to express their anger. Palestinians inside the boundaries of occupied 1948 Palestine, also known as the fake regime of Israel, are those who survived the ethnic cleansing of 1948. As part of this effort, the regime tried to eliminate all symbols and reminders of their Palestinian identity. However, the Palestinians did not forget their roots, and in the latest round of escalation, they reasserted their identity, organized widespread demonstrations, took down the colonial flag, and raised Palestine's in its place. They also burned police stations and vehicles because these are not symbols of law and order, but rather enforcers of colonialism. Such comprehensive popular participation has sent a strong message about the revolutionary vigor of the Palestinian people. It showed a new generation of Palestinians who have not forgotten their national awareness, even though they grew up in a distorted political environment that promoted surrender as peace and did not experience past intifadas and confrontations. The popular movement also garnered widespread international solidarity. Large demonstrations took place in dozens of countries worldwide, including in the U.S., whose administration is the world's staunchest supporter of the fake regime of Israel. Western powers in particular remain biased in favor of the regime of Israel, which enjoys almost unlimited Western support in terms of weaponry, money, and political cover. However, mass grassroots demonstrations indicate a worldwide awakening of conscience. This, in turn, will make positions in support of the fake regime of Israel increasingly embarrassing for officials who will struggle to justify policies whose ethical grounding have been undermined. Sins of Israeli regime crimes against children and civilians, the destruction of whole residential neighborhoods, and attacks by occupation forces and settlers in Al-Quds have propelled the worldwide opposition to the fake regime of Israel. Equally important have been pictures and footages of Palestinian resistance. People empathize with victims, but they also draw inspiration from examples of battle and heroism. It remains paramount to continue to remind the world that Palestinians are the victims. There is an enormous imbalance of power between them and the fake regime of Israel. They are the side that suffer the most in loss of lives and property. But it is also important to understand the armed resistance. Striking Tel Aviv with rockets is not primarily about the damage it causes, but the message it sends. The Zionist regime's efforts to create an image of itself as a stable and prosperous have failed. Instead, it is the Palestinian movement that sent a reminder that a colonial society is an abnormal society. Now, it is the moment for the supporters of Palestinian rights around the world to redouble their efforts to impose worldwide isolation on the Zionist regime's colonial apartheid system. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
I tell you with confidence, the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and it will not stop. May 7th, 2021. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, all praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the Worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, upon his pure and immaculate household, upon his chosen companions, and upon those who follow them until the Day of Judgment. The issue of Palestine continues to be the most important and active issue for the Islamic Ummah collectively. The policies of the oppressive and cruel capitalism have driven a people out of their homes, their homeland, and their ancestral roots, and instead it has installed a terrorist regime and has housed a foreign people therein. Can one find a logic weaker and shakier than that of the establishment of the Zionist regime? On the basis of their claim, the Europeans oppressed the Jews during the Second World War. Therefore, they believe that the oppression against the Jews should be revenged by displacing a nation in West Asia and by committing a horrible massacre in that country. This is the logic which Western governments have relied on with their wholehearted and blind support for the Zionist regime, thereby disapproving all their false claims about human rights and democracy. It has been 70 years now that they have been sticking with this laughable and at the same time tragic story, and every now and then they add a new chapter to it. Since the first day, the Zionists turned the usurped Palestine into a terrorist base. Israel is not a country. Rather, it is a terrorist camp against the Palestinian nation and other Muslim nations. Fighting against this despotic regime is fighting against oppression and terrorism. And this is a collective responsibility. Another noteworthy point is that although that the usurping regime was established in 1948, the ground for occupying that sensitive Islamic region had been prepared years before that. Those specific years coincided with the active interference of Westerners in Islamic countries with the purpose of establishing secularism and excessive and blind nationalism, and also with the goal of installing despotic governments who were infatuated with and controlled by the West.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.